This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The 10 leading U.S. Democratic contenders stood unified in their goal to unseat U.S. President Donald Trump from the White House, but there's much they disagree on. They did highlight their philosophical differences in a Thursday night debate. That debate stage is the opportunity to establish more dominance in the polls, to close the lead that front-runner Vice President Joe Biden has. U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders trail behind Biden. While the Democrats were debating, President Trump listed his administration's accomplishments in a speech to House Republicans in the city of Baltimore. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
In a speech to Republicans meeting in Baltimore, President Trump touted wins, including the tax cut, higher military spending, and cuts in regulations. He also talked about what he sees as opposition from more than just Democrats.
And the media, it's as if they're one, because they are one. They're working together. They're colluding, and they're obstructing.
Trump also slammed energy-efficient light bulbs, not just because of the cost.
The light's no good. I always look orange.
Trump highlighted this week's special congressional election wins in North Carolina, telling Republicans he expected them to take back the House next year. I'm Tim McGuire.
The United States is moving ahead with millions of dollars in aid for Ukraine's military, money that had until now been held up by the White House. The White House officials Thursday confirmed the release of $250 million in funding from the Pentagon and another $141 million in financial assistance from the State Department, shortly before lawmakers were set to admonish the administration for the delay. Earlier Thursday, the State Department announced it had been cleared to release the $141 million in aid. Speaking to reporters in Washington, the Assistant Secretary for Political and Military Affairs, R. Clark Cooper, called it part of a whole host of security assistance that they have outlined. This is VOA News. The chairman of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, Representative Elliot Engel, has subpoenaed the U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan Reconciliation, Zalmay Khalilzad, to testify at an open hearing at the committee September 19th. The Democratic Committee Chair released a statement Thursday criticizing Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, saying he flatly refused to make Khalilzad available to the House Foreign Affairs Committee, ignoring multiple requests for the briefings and testimony on the Afghanistan peace plan. Earlier this week, President Trump called off peace negotiations with the Taliban that his special envoy Khalilzad had been involved with for most of a year. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres launched a new initiative Thursday to protect religious sites around the world in the face of growing attacks on them. VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir reports the UN chief is calling for religious sites to be places of worship, not places of war.
In June, Guterres launched a companion effort to address root causes of hate speech, which he has repeatedly warned is inflaming intolerance around the world. He has been especially critical of politicians who encourage xenophobia and use language targeting minorities, refugees, and migrants, though he has refrained from calling out offenders by name.
When political figures are add fuel to the wildfire, we are all threatened.
In the aftermath of the March attacks on two mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand, that killed more than 50 people, Guterres visited the country to express his solidarity. Since then, he has been reaching out to governments, religious leaders, faith-based organizations, civil society, and other actors to formulate a plan to safeguard religious sites. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
China on Thursday extended the latest gesture of goodwill in the ongoing trade dispute with the United States as the world's two largest economies prepare for high-level trade talks. The Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman Gao Fing said China was looking into purchasing U.S. agricultural goods such as pork and soybeans. Gao said that China welcomes goodwill action from the Trump administration and that China hopes the two sides will continue to create favorable conditions for the trade negotiations. On Wednesday, the U.S. President Trump announced that he was postponing tariffs on $250 billion in Chinese goods from October 1st to October 15th. Climate change activists plan to disrupt flights Friday at Britain's Heathrow Airport by flying drones close to Europe's busiest travel hub. British police Thursday arrested five members of the environmental group Heathrow Paws in an attempt to thwart that protest. They say that's not going to happen. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa. From the Voice of America, I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Friday, September the 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabweans mourn the late President Robert Mugabe as a controversy continues over his burial place.
The official funeral will be on Saturday. This is when heads of state and government are expected to travel to Harare. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said there are 11 confirmed leaders who are coming.
That's VOA reporter Blessing Zulu in Harare. A Zambian company is offering to provide a tombstone for the grave of former President Mugabe. A Tanzanian journalist arrested for sedition appeared in court on Thursday, looking frail. And Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has met with former President Ernest Bai Koroma amid rising tensions in the country.
Since the elections of 2018, there have been some instability in the country. So the two leaders decided it is very necessary for the two of them to meet to find a way by which these difficulties can be resolved.
Ibrahim Ben Cabo is the deputy leader in parliament for the opposition All People's Congress Party. Senegalese President Macky Sall wants changes to the law in order to criminalize rape. And we'll have a report about children and cyberbullying. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabweans continue to mourn the death of former President Robert Mugabe, even as a controversy between his family and the government continues over his burial place. Thousands turned out on Thursday at the Ruth Farah Sports Stadium in the capital, Harare, to pay their last respects. Reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service in Harare says President Emmerson Mnangagwa has announced the names of current and former heads of state who will be attending Mr. Mugabe's funeral tomorrow, Saturday.
On Thursday, the body of the late former president, Robert Mugabe, was taken to Rufaro Stadium. This is a significant stadium in the country because that is where he took his first oath of office in 1980. Unfortunately, yesterday there was a stampede as several people were injured when they were trying to view his partially opened casket.
Do we know finally where the former president is to be buried?
Unfortunately, no. That was supposed to have been resolved yesterday when President Emmerson Mnangagwa visited former President Robert Mugabe's 25-bedroom mansion in Borodeo, Harare. He requested for a meeting with the former First Lady Grace Mugabe and other family members to try and resolve that issue. Unfortunately, after about 45 minutes, they did not agree on anything because the president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, was pushing for Mr. Mugabe to be buried at the country's National Heroes Acre in Harare, where heroes are buried. But because there is this acrimony between Mr. Mnangagwa and the Mugabe family, the family said that the state programs will end on Saturday with the official funeral, and then on Sunday the family will take over. The nephew of former President Robert Mugabe, Leo Mugabe, addressed the media and said that Mr. Mugabe will be buried at a private place.
I know there's still much uncertainty surrounding the burial of the former president, when and where, but do you know, or has the government made any announcement in terms of who is coming to the funeral?
Of course, the official funeral will be on Saturday. This is when heads of state and government are expected to travel to Harare. President Emmerson Mnangagwa said there are 11 confirmed leaders who are coming. That is Equatorial Guinea's President Teodoro Obiang Nguema Basogo, Democratic Republic of Congo's Felix Tshisekedi, Ghana's Nana Akufo-Addo, Arthur Peter Mutharika of Malawi, João Lourenço of Angola, Saharawi's Brahim Gali, President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa, Mozambican leader Filipe Nyusi, Zambia's Edgar Lungu, Namibia's Hein Gob, and Kenya's Uhuru Kenyatta. And of course, he also said that there are some former presidents who have also confirmed their attendance, who include Zambia's Kenneth Kaunda and Rupia Banda, Mozambique's Joaquim Chissano, South Africa's Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma, Namibia's Sam Nyoma and Hifikepunye Pohamba, and Botswana's Festus Mogae, and China and Iran and also Cuba are going to send representatives.
Blessing, thank you very much again for the update.
Thank you so much, James.
That's reporter Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service in Harare. A Zambia-based granite and marble stone company is offering to provide a tombstone for the grave of former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe. Michael Nkata, the spokesperson for Kuma Investments Limited, which owns the granite and the marble company, says the group has officially written to the Zambian Foreign Ministry as well as the Zimbabwean Embassy in Zambia about its plans to erect a tombstone for the former leader. Nkata tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the company's goal is to express its heartfelt condolences to the people of Zimbabwe for a great African leader.
This gesture is all about us appreciating our leaders, appreciating also the role that Mugabe played in the Southern and Africa at large. Yeah, he was a revolutionary. That's our understanding.
What is the significance of this gesture to your organization, the Kuma Investments Limited?
The significance is just to appreciate our leaders. It's not just about Mugabe. It's also about any other leader. We want to uphold the culture of valuing and appreciating the leadership that we've had. I believe we're setting a good precedent by doing so in the event that we are accorded that opportunity.
Talking about that opportunity, what steps has your organization taken to actualize this gesture of yours to have your company put up the tombstone for the former Zimbabwean president? Take me through it.
I'll begin by saying this, Peter. This is an interstate thing. So the very first thing that we did, we wrote to our Minister of Foreign Affairs, and then we also wrote to the Zimbabwean Embassy here in Zambia, since we are in Zambia. So once these two institutions corroborate, then we are given a go-ahead. We pick it up from there. We are not running alone. Of course, the state comes into play here. So we are law-abiding institution, and as such, we wait up until such a time that we are communicated to.
Well, some people are saying, despite your gesture, former President Mugabe was a controversial figure and that some of his policies were divisionary, not only in Zimbabwe, but around the world, which attracted sanctions. So they questioned your gesture of trying to erect a tombstone for the former Zimbabwean leader. How do you answer to such critics?
Peter, what I can tell you is that in life, we have both sets of people. There are people that will flow with us, meaning there are people that will agree with our policies, and there are yet others that will disagree. Both people are important, but we are looking at the positive side. We're looking at leadership. See, if you read the Bible, I'm a believer. The Bible says all leadership is ordained of God. So being a leader does not entail that you do everything right. There will be pitfalls. There will be errors here and there. Critics will always be there, but we are looking at the bigger picture. This is the leader. He was ordained of God. So we are extending that olive branch on that basis, Peter.
Michael Nkata is the spokesperson for the Zambia-based Kuma Investments Limited Company. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio met Thursday in Freetown with former President Ernest Bai Koroma amid rising tensions in the country. After winning the 2018 presidential election, President Bio commissioned a study which report accused the former president and his government of corruption. Since then, the newly reconstituted Anti-Corruption Commission has gone after a number of officials of the former government for allegedly stealing state funds. Ibrahim Ban Kabo, deputy leader in parliament for the opposition All People's Congress Party, says both leaders expressed their commitment to the peace and stability of the country.
Since the elections of 2018, there had been some instability in the country, which created quite a number of difficulties in the administration of the state. So the two leaders decided that for peace and tranquility, it is very necessary for the two of them to meet to find a way by which these difficulties can be resolved. And this led to a meeting in Freetown, whereby President Ernest Bai Koroma, the former president, and the President Maada Bio, the current president, met, discussed quite a number of issues relating to good governance, to democracy, the rule of law, and the sustenance of the democratic culture.
At whose request did this meeting take place?
Well, both the former president and the current president saw the need to listen to their West African colleagues, who definitely were very worried about developments in Sierra Leone, whereby people were complaining about the insecurity that was creeping into the society. But both leaders had assured their colleagues in West Africa that they would do something to resolve this matter.
President Madabio, soon after he took over, commissioned a report on corruption in the country. And that commission came out a report accusing the former president and his government of corruption. And since then, the Anti-Corruption Commission under President Biya has been very aggressive, going after even, I would say, the former president and some of his ministers. Was this discussed in terms of how to move forward?
Well, it was discussed, of course, because the issue you just spoke about was also responsible for some of the instability in the country. And we also know that both leaders discussed those issues, including the violence that has been seen in many parts of the country, including the humiliation of citizens, the incarceration of very highly placed people. Both of them think that this matter should be handled and should be put to rest. There are other causative factors that led to this problem, including the installation of a speaker in a parliament where the opposition had a majority, including the problems of installing an anti-corruption commissioner who was not supported by the opposition. But the fact of the matter is that both leaders have found it necessary to address the issue of instability in the country.
Now that these two leaders have met, what's going to happen?
Well, the two leaders have agreed that a committee be set up comprising members of the APC and members of the SLPP. This committee would meet from time to time to address national issues, issues of democracy, issues of peace and tranquility and concord. And then this committee would report from time to time to the leaders.
Ibrahim Ben Kabo is the deputy leader in parliament for the opposition All People's Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September the 13th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. A Tanzanian journalist arrested in July this year after criticizing President John Magufuli in print appeared in court on Thursday, looking weak and having trouble walking. Eric Kabendera is facing several charges, including sedition. Charles Kumbe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Prospects for Tanzanian journalist Eric Kabendera's release were dashed Thursday when the government prosecutor said the investigation against him is still in process. Kabendera had trouble walking when he entered the court chamber. His lawyer, Jebra Kambole, says the plan for his medical treatment is unclear. He says the agenda for Eric's treatment has become a major challenge for the court, which has been informed that Eric's health status is not good. The lawyer said the magistrate issued instructions including meeting with a prison doctor for health checkup. Kambole said another hearing on September 18th will look at Kabendera's health status and the court may issue more instructions at that time. The 39-year-old Kabendera was arrested at the end of July at his home amid questions about his citizenship. Later, the charges were changed and he was accused of sedition, money laundering and organized crime. Kabendera's work has been published in national and international newspapers. He regularly covers Africa's politics, trade, and extractive industry for leading publications, including The Guardian and The Times, both based in Britain. After Kabendera was arrested, Kambole said his client was facing sedition charges in connection with an article in The Economist in which Kabendera said President Magufuli is bulldozing Tanzania's freedom. Earlier this month, the Committee to Protect Journalists included Kabendera on its 10 most urgent cases that require global attention. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
After months of protests and rallies led by women groups in Senegal, President Macky Sall has called on his Minister of Justice to present a possible change to the law in order to criminalize rape. Hawa Ba, Senegal Program Officer for Open Society Initiative in West Africa, spoke to Ricky Stryak about why the law needs to change.
Recently, there was a recrudescence of acts of violence against women and rape, but also killings. And there were a widespread movement from women organizations, spontaneous, also demonstrations. We are rallying, we'll say that we are fed up and we want the state to show willingness and act on the rape issues and mainly in criminalizing it.
So as of now, rape and pedophilia are not criminalized in Senegalese law. What does that mean?
There's a law against rape since 1999, like 20 years ago. There's a law against violence, on violence against women since 2005. But what we are seeing is that these laws have many, many shortcomings. They are not up to the standard. Rape, it's 5 to 10 years maximum sentence. But still, the third problem is that even these laws are not adequately implemented. Even though there is a law criminalizing rape, we still have to resolve the perennial issues of respecting the standard in terms of international legal framework and regional African legal framework about sex and gender-based violence, but also ensure that the laws are adequately implemented.
Macky Sall has just asked Parliament to do this. What are the likelihood that they actually will do it? Will there be any opposition to this proposed change?
I don't foresee any opposition, but what I foresee is lack of implementation, lack of education, lack of awareness. Because there are laws, but there are no, people don't know about them, or even if they know about them, because law enforcement know about them, judges, lawyers, you know, the judiciary knows about is aware about those legal instruments, but they fail to apply them. They fail to, they fail women, they fail girls, victims of law of rape, victims of violence, because not only they are very lenient and not really putting the highest sentences in cases of rape or violence, but you see somebody who is sentenced, sent to jail, and 6 months later, he's, you know, released.
Hawa Ba is the Senegal Program Officer for the Open Society Initiative of West Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. A recent survey conducted by the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, says 1 in 3 young people say they have been a victim of online bullying, and 1 in 5 say they have skipped school because of cyberbullying and violence. Mavis Ochiri reports.
Almost 3/4 of young people posted social media networks, including Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter, are the most common places for online bullying. UNICEF and the United Nations Special Representative of the Secretary General on Violence Against Children released a report this month. Young people use the U-Report app to relate their experience online. More than 170,000 U-Report users between 18 and 24 in 30 countries responded to the poll. Cyberbullying, UNICEF says, includes sending threatening or harassing messages and images online and can include extortion and encouraging victims to harm themselves. In Malawi, 48% of the respondents indicated that they have been victims of digital bullying, indicating this problem is severe. A young woman from Malawi who spoke on condition of anonymity said she received extortion threats from someone she didn't know who had pushed her to accept a Facebook friend request. She says the anonymous friend threatened to post naked pictures of her on Facebook if she refused to pay the money he requested.
I went ahead to block him or for him to message me again on another Facebook account.
The woman became scared and depressed, worried that pictures of her naked would be exposed for her family and others to see. James Elva is a UNICEF spokesperson for Eastern and Southern Africa in Nairobi. He says cyberbullying seems to be increasing in Africa with the growth of mobile phones and social media.
It's a mix of what governments can, what social media networks can do, and then what mums and dads and kids can do. I think to start with social media networks, because that's really key, they need to improve their ethical standards and practices, specifically in regard to how they collect and manage data. I think there's also, given their profit margins, there's also a lot of space for social network providers to support more when it comes to schools providing safe spaces or training of parents and teachers on how to manage and deal with cyberbullying.
An elder says parents can spend more time with children to make it easier to spot online problems. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posing. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with a look at this weekend's CAF Champions League fixtures. The first leg encounters will take place this weekend with 16 losers on aggregate scheduled to enter the CAF Confederations Cup playoff round. Two-time winners Kotoko of Ghana will face off with Tunisian giant Etoile du Sahel, who won the competition in 2007, and the first leg match will be played in Kumasi. Record 8-time winners Al-Holly will be away to Equatorial Guinea's Kano Sport in Malabo as they look to go all the way and clinch their 9th trophy this season. South African giants Mamelodi Sundowns will square off with Seychelles side Côte d'Or in Victoria, while Angola's Petro de Luanda will host Ugandan outfit KCCA in Luanda. In N'Djamena, defending champion Esperance de Tunis will start their title defense against Elect Sport, who are the Chad Premier League champions, while 5-time champions TP Mazembe of DRC will face off with Madagascar's Faso Juniors in Mahajanga, while Algerian giant JS Kabylie are set to face Guinean side Horoya in Tizi Ouzouer. In boxing news, Ghana's Patrick Alote will hope to upset the boxing world and clinch the WBO Super Welterweight title from Jimmy Mungua in California this Saturday. Alote, who has 40 wins and 3 losses to his name, became the opponent of choice for Mungua after he failed to reach agreements to fight Canelo Alvarez, Gennady Golovkin and JC Vargas. For the Ghanaian, he says he feels very ready for the challenge of taking on a very good boxer.
Yeah, well, nothing, but I'm coming in to win. So if the fans are shouting for Mungua, that means they are shouting for me too, because I love Mexicans. And I can tell myself that I'm also a Mexican right now, because I'm fighting with a Mexican. So I'm also a Mexican.
In athletics news, Beatrice Chipkoi and Michael Kibet are expected to lead Kenya's bid for glory in the long distances at the World Championships in Doha, Qatar, which begins from September the 27th to October the 6th. Michael Kibet, who turned 20 a week ago, was only a toddler back in 2005 when Kenya won its last gold medal at the World Championships in the 12-lap race. And this time around, he might just be the man to end the country's dirt in talent and medal in the 5,000 meters race.
To me, I don't know about the criteria. If I will be among them, I am sure I'll come back with a medal.
Diamond League Series champions Beatrice Chipkoe will lead Kenya's bid for gold in the women's 3,000 meters steeplechase.
I'm not under any pressure, because I'm going to try my best to bring a medal this time round.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The UN Security Council voted unanimously on Thursday to ease the arms embargo on the Central African Republic, where the government signed a peace deal with 14 armed groups. And that's it for this Friday, September 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, migrants from Nigeria, Ethiopia, Zambia, and Kenya have been the target of personal attacks and their businesses have been looted. Xenophobia in South Africa on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.